Good morning. This is John Berard. And this is the Cross Community Working Group's framework for Cross Community Working Group's working group. I see that we've got some people in the Adobe chat room, including Becky Burr, the co-chair. Becky, are you there?
I'm here. I don't know if you can hear me.
Great. How do you feel, Becky?
Okay.
Well, we look forward to seeing you when you're up and around again, so get well.
All right.
I'd like to start, I guess, Mary, just by introductions, and then you can take us through the agenda.
Sure.
Okay. So, as I said, I'm John Berard from the business constituency. Avery, why don't you take it from there? Introduce yourself. Come on now.
Avery Doria, member of the NCSG.
Everton Rodriguez from Brazil, fellowship program.
Welcome. Tijani Benjema, vice chair of ALAC.
Steve Chan, ICANN staff.
While she's coming up to the front, so this is Jim Galvin from ESSAC, also vice chair of ESSAC.
Janine Goodman with Avenue 4.
This is Mary Wong from ICANN staff. And John, I think you already introduced Becky from in the Adobe, right?
And who else do we have on the in the Adobe room? The timing of this working group is a little odd for us today. It comes just before the GNSO Council public meeting. Avery and Mary and I need to be there for that, and so we won't go any longer than 12:30. That means that I want to truncate our conversation in the most productive way. And I'll have Mary take us through what the agenda had been, and then we can discuss some changes that perhaps I'd like to implement.
So in the interest of time, as John said, we had had an initial agenda that was going to take folks, especially newer folks, you know, kind of laboriously through our work. But suffice it to say that this working group was created, and as John mentioned, maybe some events may have superseded our work, really to try to map out a common path forward for cross-community working groups. Even if you're new to ICANN, you would have seen that there seems to be an increasing number of cross-community working groups simply because a lot of the number of issues that the ICANN community is dealing with cuts across more than one group. And as it is, while this group was chartered by the GNSO and the CCNSO councils, we have participants from the ALAC, the ESSAC, and other groups as well. So what we had done was clearly to, not clear to the newer people, but what we had done was to look at a typical working group's life cycle and mapped out certain phases, and we had planned to make a progress report of where we are with that. But as John noted, there may actually be more productive and quicker ways of using our time. So John, on that note, I'm going to hand it back to you for your suggestion.
Thank you, Mary. I had asked that the spreadsheet that was originally created at the start of our work, which cataloged the aspects of the cross-community working groups that had already been impaneled, be put up. Do we have that? Great. So if we can begin in this way, before the GNSO Council this afternoon is a motion to accept the cross-community working group on Internet governance charter. And it's one of two or three very high-profile and important cross-community working groups that are in place right now. If one were to look at that charter, you would see that they're entirely they have answered in the way that suits them best the questions that we had posed initially that relate to the life cycle of a working group. There is the here I'll turn back to Mary. I'm going to picked the wrong words. Can you find the actual descriptions we use for the life cycle of the working group? Yeah, the five phases of it. While she does that, I just wanted to make a couple of points about the Internet Governance Charter. So clearly, as we have discussed and as they have implemented, each participating SO and AC, supporting organization and advisory committee, adopts the same charter. That may seem in this day and age a fairly obvious thing, but in the past it hasn't always been the case. So I think that based upon the conversations we've had, we would certainly agree with that. They are established, that particular working group is established by the participating SOs and ACs. I think we're taking a broader look at that. Well, we think that almost anybody in the community can suggest that an issue would benefit from the review and participation of a cross-community working group. Having said that, it then becomes incumbent upon that either that one person, that one group, that one constituency, that one stakeholder group to be persuasive in making the case, to draw others to the point. Now, this is an interesting point for this particular charter, and I think, Avery, you've had a hand in drafting this charter, yes?
Yeah.
Avery is nodding yes.
Yeah, I've been probably involved in the last several of the charters that are cross-community groups at the moment.
Excellent. And this one specifically says that the working group members are not to represent the SO and AC from which they come or are appointed, either collectively or individually. Do I have that right, Avery? Yes. So that may be a difference from what we've been talking about, because we have been talking about creating membership that would allow, in fact, promote the members to represent the group from which they come. This group, of course, being high profile and for a very specific purpose, addresses the requirement to communicate back to the community. Now, that's not something we've talked about with regard to cross-community working groups. We've talked about the mechanism by which we would report back to the chartering organizations. But we don't give, have not thought to give cross-community working groups this suggestion, this requirement, this guideline. And that may be something that we should think about adding in. Because if an issue is broad enough to require a cross-community working group, it probably means that there is cross-community interest that would benefit from our reporting back. So I thought that was an interesting and new item that we should consider. The work plan, of course, every working group needs to have a work plan. Yeah, sure, go ahead, Aubrey.
On those two points that you brought up, they're actually related. The one where people aren't serving as representatives, but therefore have an especial responsibility to report back because of the sensitivity of, you know, what we were dealing with and the fact that it was pointing to such a wide variety of things. I think those two really went hand in hand.
I feel personally foolish for not having thought of it myself in our context, just because that's what I do for a living, and here I was not even thinking about communications, when in fact so much of the anxiety and anger that I hear in the hallways at ICANN seems to be rooted in a miscommunication or lack of communication. Now, I realize that in the more technical aisles of ICANN, there's never any miscommunication.
So, Jim here, just on this topic, I'm concerned that we're putting up a solution to solve a problem, and as opposed to just sort of stating the problem space we want to deal with. I agree that there is a concern of ensuring there's communication back from the cross-community working group to the original constituency. So we need to make sure that that's there. I guess we're just talking about this, whether we want to say that members of a cross-community working group never represent their constituencies, or are we offering that as an option? I think that it's an interesting problem space. I know that's a different problem. You know, that's where someone is, speaks out of turn, And, you know, one could argue that, well, maybe they elected the wrong person to represent them if they have someone speaking out of turn. But on the other hand, some people get a little, you know, overexcited and into what they're doing. So I'm wondering if maybe it should just be an option. I mean, as part of being appointed to the group, should come with a flag of some sort that says that you're allowed to speak for the group or not. In addition to adding this requirement that Avery is bringing up, which obviously is very important, there needs to be some kind of mechanism or some obligation. I don't know that we can enforce it, but there needs to be some sort of obligation to ensure that there's communication back.
Becky, has- Becky, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think that this turns entirely on the nature of the work that the working group is doing, how close it comes to feeding into the policy development process, because, of course, we have, you know, kind of formal policy development processes, and you wouldn't want to use the cross-community working group process to supplant that. And I think that was the issue in the, you know, in terms of the transition, is that, you know, groups are going to be coming up with basically recommendations for stuff that feels very much like policy. And in that context, you know, the ICANN bylaws require us each to sort of develop a policy in accordance with the bylaws as they stand. And so that is a place where it's important that, you know, that there's no confusion about sort of the status of individuals on the cross-community group and the need to report back and feed into the more standard policy development processes. So I think that the answer is it depends a lot on the nature of the work that the cross-community group is doing, but at the very least it needs to be a question that gets asked and answered.
Thank you, Becky.
Thank you, Tijani speaking. The chartering organization will have to approve the recommendations of the working group. So they have to be informed. And the best is that they are informed as the work is going on. Because suppose we agree on a recommendation, and there is a major opposition from one of the chartering organization about this recommendation. If we continue without having the feedback from the chartering organization, we may build on this recommendation other recommendations at the end when we arrive at the end to have them approve the recommendations, we will have to rework all the recommendations because they are built on one of very opposed recommendation. And I think that one of the very first cross-community working group was the JAS working group, isn't it?
One of the earlier. There were some before.
Yes, and I remember we had one liaison for each chartering organization. It's sure that we need all the members to speak on their own behalf. They don't have to come to represent their constituency, but we need a channel of communication with the chartering organizations so that we do the work without big conflicts, if you want. Thank you.
Thank you very much. This is John Berard again. Three comments, I think, underscore what made me think that we would be able to move quickly to offer final recommendations to the community from our work, because I do not see us as setting rules for cross community working groups. I see us establishing parameters for them that in our view communication can go from silence until the end which I guess we wouldn't recommend, but we would probably recommend communicating on a regular basis back to the SOs and ACs so that we could monitor any deviation from their point of view to some wider point of distribution. And so that's really what I'd like us to try and talk a bit about today are the parameters for the aspects of cross community working groups. Avery.
I'm not actually sure the parameters might not even be confining. One of the things that I'm thinking of is that what you've definitely set up is considerations, that these are all issues that must be considered in forming one. I can imagine a situation where one would be creating a cross-community working group with hard representatives who actually were able to put out statements quickly without needing to go to prior, you know, so it really depends on the situation of the group. If you were putting together a group where you really had to respond, not in real time, but in close to real time to a situation, you could actually come up, but it would have to be an intentional thing that you considered. Are these people representatives? You know, can they send out something without getting prior approval, you know, et cetera. So I'm not sure that we're setting up constraints, but so much parameters so much as these are the issues that you have to deal with, and here are some of the standard solution paths.
This is Mary Wong from ICANN staff. Without commenting on the parameters and the potential limitations of those, I wanted to offer up something that this group might want to look at as perhaps a working example or as a live, real starting point for some of the things that have been said today, and that is the current cross-community working group on the IANA stewardship transition that I think was formed with the basically the collaboration of just about all the SOs, ACs, even though it started with the GNSO and CCNSO. The group has a charter. It started working. It's working to a pretty hard deadline, you know, as many people know. So without, obviously, we don't want to adopt what it's doing wholesale, but it might be useful to look at that charter, that those processes, and see if within our working group we can say those are useful principles, those are useful guidelines. Here are some other nice-to-haves, but these are the absolute basics that you must have for every cross-community working group. That might be one way to proceed.
Thank you very much. I think that you took the bad example, because the IANA stewardship transition cross-community working group has formal representatives from ACs and SOs. So it cannot be taken as an example, because this task, the transition, is something very special, I think.
Well, this is John Berard. In considering, if we were to move, we've now moved from rules to parameters to
considerations.
Okay. As in moving to considerations, it's possible that an issue arises that is of interest across the community that might not be as high a profile as IANA to stewardship transition, but might benefit from having the same kind of tight membership requirements, and that ought to be people ought to know that that's a possibility, right? And this leads me to the chart that's in the Adobe room now. This was the original chart created for the origination of this working group, however many months back. We haven't hit the year mark yet, so I'm feeling pretty good. But if you were to take a look at the topic and issue columns, those are the ones shaded in blue, it strikes me as if we've almost gotten behind ourselves in thinking about, you know, I mean, it, as if we were further along at the start than we have become, because as we continue to look at the issue, we moved ourselves further and further away from what might have been a fairly workable solution that emerge right at the front end, which I think is the result of the fact that cross-community working groups are not new. It wasn't, hey, what's this? What might it look like? How might it work? But they have been in place. There is experience that we can look at, and as this chart shows, there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of them, 6 of them right there that we pulled examples from. And so maybe if we were to look at the topic and the issues only, that might be might help us get to a point where there were considerations that we could suggest. I don't think it's any secret that that the jazz and the jig cross-community working groups are the mother and father of this work, right? And you can decide which is which. Because one worked and one didn't, and why each spun the way it did is reflective of what considerations need to be made in order to effectively construct a cross-community working group. I'm sorry?
Which one didn't work?
I would say the jazz didn't work.
But I think it worked very well. What? There was a small...
Excuse me. There was a small problem at the end, but I think it worked.
Having been in both of them, jig worked a whole lot better than jazz. And part of the problem we had in jazz is it sort of ended up appearing to work because we ended up not being all that cross-community by the end. Many of the people that had objections drifted away.
And actually, on that note, maybe I just wanted to make one clarification for the record that in terms of looking at these cases, because these were the past cases, one clarification is that these are not all the universe of cross-community working groups we've ever had. These were the ones that the group early on thought might be useful examples. So this chart doesn't include the ones that were formed since. And the second point of clarification I wanted to make was on the IANA stewardship transition. I wasn't talking about the ICG, and I forget what that's called. That has representatives from each group. I'm talking about the one that was just charted by the CCNSO, the GNSO, the ESSEC, the GAC, and I'm probably forgetting somebody else. I apologize. The ALAC, of course. And so that may be a useful example to add to the chart because it is a group that is open to everyone, either as a member or an observer. And that's the clarification I want to make on the record for those not in the room in case they get confused of all the groups that are going on at this point.
Go ahead.
Just to clarify, yes, I was on the drafting team of this cross-community working group, and I am talking about it. This cross-community working group and the charter stipulate that each constituency has to appoint 5 representatives. So it is formal representatives, I am talking about that.
This is John Berard. We have in our last meeting, our meeting in London, we talked about membership needing to be specific. One of the things that we talked about with regard to membership was that if you didn't want to participate, that you needed to say you didn't want to participate. That doesn't show up in any of the cross-community working group charters that I've read, and I'm wondering on that point and also on the point of consensus in the cross-community working group IG charter. It's a rough consensus. There are in the GNSO 5 levels of consensus. There are in the CCNSO 2. Actually, just one. If, you know, are you willing to die in a ditch, I think is the way Becky puts it. And we have been talking here about wanting to promote the consensus or not approach. But in terms of members, specifically designated observers, in this case, the charter says that there can be no more the number of observers cannot exceed the number of members. So you just cannot have people popping in and out which I thought was pretty good. But on just those two points, on setting specific membership requirements and on the notion of consensus, what's the thinking in that regard? How do you operate in your working groups?
You mean, this is Jim, so you mean inside of ESSAC?
Yeah.
We've actually been pretty fortunate overall because technology has the unique position that you often do have a right and a wrong kind of thing. I mean, it's not 100% true, but because that tends to be true, we tend to achieve consensus fairly straightforwardly. We have a lot of discussion about what are the issues, what are you trying to achieve, what's the problem you're solving, and generally a solution tends to fall out. Now, having said that, of course, we have had a few times when we haven't quite achieved consensus, and we have a mechanism that allows for individual members who might have a different opinion. And they feel quite strongly about it, then the consensus of the committee as a whole. And there is a spot at the end of all of our work products for dissensions to be documented. People can withdraw from a discussion altogether, and they don't have to give a reason for that. They can just state their name and say, I wasn't part of this work product. And they can also publish a statement if they have a particular issue. So they can either withdraw from the whole thing and say why, or they can just pick a particular issue where they had a different point of view and document it. So ultimately, the chair gets to still call consensus, and consensus is exactly what it sounds like. It's not typically all that divided. We eventually come around, but we just have a means for alternate opinions to be documented.
Thank you, Jim. Becky, you have a point?
Yeah, I think Aubrey can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think on the transition stewardship CC working group, although there is a sort of number of members from each constituency, there's no limit on observers, and the charter specifically says that the observers can participate as if they were full members. The only issue is if we ever do polling, which is the not where you want to come out. You want to strive for consensus, but if you want to do any kind of polling to inform the group about sort of the array of views, then the participation would be limited to the observers. But I think that the sort of the number five was sort of specifically to not to say these people are representatives of the group, but to say sort of the group, the community that they come from. The chartering organization that they come from are, saying these people are the officials. Everybody else can be an observer, but it's not that eliminates the need to go back to the chartering organization.
Thank you, Becky. Aubrey?
That's indeed correct. One extra piece on it is that, and it even goes beyond polling, is when there is time to make the consensus call, it is those members that make the consensus call. It's not even a chair that makes the consensus call so much as it is those members that make the consensus call, obviously helping the chair do it. And so that it doesn't even need to be a vote. It's just that when it comes time to say, yes, we have consensus, or no, we have rough consensus, it is those people that have to agree on that particular call.
Thank you, Aubrey. I want to pick up on a point that has come up that I don't think we've talked about, and that's dissent. I know that in the expert working group on registrant directory services, there was a rather public discussion over whether dissent could be, should be, would be attached to the report. Jim's just talked about how the ESSAC reports do allow for dissent. I personally don't see any problem with dissent being allowed, but I wonder if the nature of a cross-community working group should make that qualify at a higher level before it gets attached.
So, Jim here. Yeah, one of the things that's interesting, though, is, again, ESSAC, since you asked how we do it, we're just an advisory committee. So we're trying to... we're trying to inform the community. And, you know, others get to decide if they're going to act on what we've said. And so it's helpful to understand sometimes the balance in the discussion. Okay, so we don't enforce, we don't adjudicate, and we have no mechanism for doing any of those things. PDP working groups really are kind of a little bit different, because ultimately it occurs to me that dissension is probably not what you want. In the end, you want a work product which represents the opinion of the preferred, trying to avoid saying correct, but preferred forward path, you know, which ideally is everyone. It's not clear to me that a PDP group should have a dissension present. You know, it really should be the public-facing position should be whatever it is, and that's the end of the story. If anybody wants to see what alternate views were, in the case of a PDP group, unlike ESSAC, all the deliberations and discussions are public, right? So you've got all the archives, the mailing list, all the voices. So if you really wanted the detail, you could go get it. But, you know, I don't... Dissension is not something that I would... not like what ESSAC does. I don't think there should be a dissenting view in policy decisions that's visible.
Thank you, Jim. Mary, you... Is someone on?
No, actually, I wanted to say something, may I? This is Mary Wong from ICANN staff, speaking in my staff capacity rather than on behalf of anyone else in Adobe. I wanted to follow up on Jim's comments with, I guess, two points, and I may be throwing a tiny, not spanner in the works, but just adding another, well, depends on which continent you're on, I think, or from. It may be an added layer to consider, but so two points. One of the things that, you know, this group might need to discuss further, building from this, is, you know, there is the deliberations within the cross-community working group, and then that was your question about the dissent, or what in the GNSO you would call a minority statement, and then what happens when that report goes back to each of the chartering organizations. I think here we're venturing into territory that this group hasn't even really talked about, because we focused a lot on the initiation and the formation and the chartering, and it seems like we've got some sense that all that has to be agreed on by the SOs and ACs who participate. So the question there is whether there's a sort of an equivalent thing on the other side, and whether that changes whether or not the rules or principles or parameters are about there must be one public-facing element, for example. So I think that's something that's worth thinking about. There's the group's view, and then there's what happens when the group's view or views goes back to the respective SOs, ACs. The other point that occurred to me as Jim was speaking was whether this group has considered that cross-community working groups may, for the most part, if not all the time, really not be policy-forming groups, and whether that makes a difference, that you've got a CWG that actually, and I can't think of an example offhand, but that's actually going to recommend policy that would be applicable across most, of, if not all, the SOACs, that's more appropriately done through a CWG rather than within the remit of an SOAC. Is that possible? Is that something that you want to think about? Because if so, then that sort of CWG might look and work very differently from one that is coordinating on non-policy issues. Or non-policy, certainly in the GNSO, for example, when you have consensus policy that's binding on contracted parties, that might be a different kettle of fish altogether, to continue the metaphors.
Thank you, Mary. Anybody want to jump in on that? Yes.
about Tijani speaking, about consensus. I do prefer the different levels of consensus, but that doesn't mean that a full consensus will be. Sure, it will be stronger than a rough consensus, but it is consensus. There is or there is not consensus. So, in the final report, we will have everything which have consensus will be a recommendation with minority point of view recorded. In any case, it's better than a vote, because a vote, there is a loser. There is frustration. There is tension. When you have a different point of view and the majority have another point of view, you will be happy to see your point of view reported on. So in my point of view, the consensus must be the main tool of adopting something. We have to avoid as much as possible the vote. But the levels of consensus will give the report more nuance, if you want. We will see that some didn't agree, and so this is their point of view. And I think it is more informative and more comprehensive.
Thank you. Certainly a fair bit to think about. I feel as if we've sharpened our focus by expanding our field of vision, if that's possible. Becky, I don't know if you heard me at the front of this meeting. It's Avery and Mary and I need to be at the GNSO Council meeting, and so we're going to close at 12:30. It's now 12:20 or so. Is there anything that you've been thinking about that you'd want to throw on the table? So that we can all begin to chew on it as well, or should we just proceed with a couple of other points that I wanted to get to, which we can either do here or online?
I think we should proceed with your point.
Okay. One of the elements that I thought we might want to draw from some of the more recent cross-community working groups are statements of interest. We haven't talked about that before. I know that within the commercial stakeholder group that I'm a part of, that we've been talking about more routinely asking for statements of interest. And I think it's driven by the blurring of lines in the roles that people are playing. And I was just curious, what's the thinking of this group about statements of interest as being an element of a cross-community working group?
Yeah, I've long been accustomed to them, and I think that they're an important and good thing. But I also recognize that, for example, when you come to governments, they find it impossible because, partly it's because it's mixed up in their whole notion of being prohibited from having any conflicts of interest, and sort of even asking them for a statement of interests beyond their national interest is an accusation and is seen as an accusation. And I forget what group we went through that in. It might have been, I forget. We went through in that group, but there was a real resistance because they said, what? You know, we can't do that. Now, there's not all governments took that. Some of them said, fine, you know, it's simple to write my statement of interest. I work for government X and I do what they tell me to do, period. That's an easy statement to make. So I think that they're an important element, and I think they're one that should almost be a requirement given the multi-stakeholder environment. The fact is that you come in carrying a stake, you know, and you've declared that you've got a stake, so you really should tell everyone what it is. And though I think we can also, though, permit the fact that if you happen to be a government employee, we understand that your stake is automatic. But then again, I look at the GAC, and I know some of those representatives only contract to the government as representatives. Only contract as representatives, and they've got businesses on the side, and they've got this, and they've got that. And they use their participation in ICANN as one of their selling cards for their other stuff. So I think they're important, and I think we have to have allowances, but...
I think they're important as well. So let me just get a sense of what everyone else thinks. Jim and Becky, I'm going to come to you, and I'll come back to you.
So this is Jim. A question. It's cross-community working group, so members are coming from other communities. Don't all communities require a statement of interest? They don't?
No, this is John. No, they don't.
Okay. Because, ESSEC does. We have ours there, which is kind of interesting. So what I was going to suggest is if you could backfill then, yeah. In that case, you know, statements of interest, you just carry it forward, right? But, okay.
I am, Tijani speaking. I am, I don't see a cross-community working group without statement of interest. You can put whatever you want in your statement. It is a declaration. So you need to declare it. You, as Avery said, you can say, I am employee of a government, so I cannot do anything without have their consultant. You have to write it, that's all. But if you have other activities, other private activities, and you can use your participation in the working group to serve this activity, it will be more severe. So you have, I think the statement has to be done.
Thank you. Becky, your view?
I agree with that. I think, you know, it's becoming fairly, routine at ICANN. You know, members of the board, everybody else, we're always talking about that. So to me, it just seems the basic... I suppose if it's members of a government who refuse to provide a statement of interest, maybe one just looks the other way, or one assumes that the government, the statement, the interest of the government representative is the interest of the government.
Thank you, Becky. The last point that I'll bring up, and it may require a bit more time than we have or than we want to give, is the notion of expertise. There's domain expertise that you could seek and that maybe even use as qualification for participation in a cross-community working group. And there's outside experts. We've seen examples of both of these. And I was just curious what the thinking was in terms of the role for a domain expertise requirement, guideline, consideration, and outside expert. Anybody want to pick up on that? We could go in reverse order, and I could ask you, Beck.
No.
All right, well, I tell you what, then. Let's just close it here, then. I appreciate everybody's willingness to come into the bowels of the Hyatt. And we will move forward in this joyful task. Thank you all.
Thanks, everybody.